This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. President Obama will deliver his annual State of the Union address this evening. The first year of the president's second term was often a challenging one for Mr. Obama. Bitterly partisan fights over spending and the debt ceiling contributed to the ongoing perception of Washington beset by gridlock. The president also faces ever-growing concern over privacy issues, which he sought to address recently with an initiative to change the way the National Security Agency monitors personal communications. And then there's the matter of health care reform. More provisions of the president's Affordable Care Act have gone into place, like the creation of health exchanges that are designed to allow uninsured Americans to have greater access to affordable care. But that road has not yet been a smooth one, and questions linger for many affected by the changes. The president of the largest association of doctors in the country took on the issue of health care reform when she was in Milwaukee recently. The American Medical Association is a backer of the Affordable Care Act. Dr. Artis Hoven met with members of the Medical Society of Milwaukee County, and she also spoke with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke about the areas the AMA hears about most often.
People are very concerned about their health care. What's going to happen in this country? Health system reform. What does it mean for me? What does it mean for my family? Will I be able to keep my doctor? Will I have to change where I get my health care? So many of the issues around the continuity of care, how I'm going to receive it, who's going to be providing it for me, and can I get care? So I think the American Medical Association, as it's moved forward in its work around the Affordable Care Act, around many of the regulatory issues in the ACA, have dealt with many of those issues and trying to make sure that as we reach out and cover more uninsured patients, that in fact the way they get their health care is being delivered appropriately, that it meets the needs of the patients and the communities in which they live. And then also as we move forward, we talk about three major areas of work that the AMA is involved in: improving health outcomes, physician satisfaction and practice stability, and medical education.
Well, let's talk about each of those areas. I think the issue with outcomes maybe has been a little overlooked. I mean, there's this very loud debate in this country over healthcare reform, even as components have been going into place. But as that national debate goes on, there are still some significant public health issues that persist, especially in a place like Milwaukee. We hear in this community about things like infant mortality and a rise in the HIV rate. Regardless of who's paying for healthcare, has there been some loss of focus on health outcomes in this country?
I think we've always talked about health outcomes, but we've never really moved the dial in a meaningful way. And at the American Medical Association, that's what we want to start doing. And what we have decided to do is take on two long-term healthcare issues. One is hypertension, high blood pressure. The other is diabetes. And if you look at the morbidity and the mortality in this country associated with that, the sickness, the loss of life, the poor quality of life around those two illnesses, we have something we need to make changes on, and we are going to move in that direction.
I kind of envision a Venn diagram of all the various health outcome issues, and I would imagine that the overlap is pretty strong when it comes to both diabetes and hypertension.
When we talk about population health in this country, it's a language and a conversation which we need to be having more of. And so this is our opportunity to move forward. People say, well, why should the American Medical Association be concerned about health outcomes? We have in this country a great public health system. We've got all sorts of entities which deal with it. But why the AMA? Well, doctors see these patients every day. All of us, no matter what the specialty is, will see patients with high blood pressure and diabetes walking through their clinics and their operating rooms. We need to be a part of the equation.
Well, and so what part of the equation do you see the AMA filling?
Well, first off, let me talk about diabetes. We have partnered now with the YMCAs throughout the country through their work on the diabetes prevention program, looking at evidence-based studies that show that if you get individuals with prediabetes referred to YMCAs, where they take on a very strict protocol of exercise and diet with feedback loops to the healthcare provider, that you can cut the risks of diabetes significantly. So partnering in collaboratives is what we are going to do. We cannot do that alone. It's going to take communities. It's going to take doctors in communities and all healthcare providers in communities to, in fact, make this happen appropriately.
And then as far as hypertension goes?
For hypertension, we're partnering with folks at the NIH, some very brilliant people working around control of hypertension. Now, let me give you some statistics. About 30 million people in this country who have healthcare access have poorly controlled hypertension. So why is that? We know how to make the diagnosis. We know how to treat it. What is wrong? Why are these folks not getting their blood pressure controlled? Because poorly controlled blood pressure is associated with lots of complications. So we're going to figure this out, and we're going to be working with these people, putting on pilot studies, trying to figure out what works in communities, what doesn't. And I think it's going to be more than just the doctors and the doctor's offices. We're going to find that it's going to take the community working together to alleviate this problem.
You talked about NIH, and that's when talk about medical research comes in. Do we fund medical research at a high enough level in this country?
Probably not. We've worried about that for some years with changes in financing, the whole issue of costs. We need to look at that critically in the future and continue to do so.
Let's talk about some of the other areas the AMA is especially interested in. Is there an issue with professional satisfaction among doctors at this point in time?
As I've gone around the country, and as many of us have learned over the last years, and as we have listened to our colleagues out there, this feeling of not being empowered to do what you want to do as a physician, this dissatisfaction with what's happening in the care community, destabilization of practices around financing, for example, Medicare funding, and all the unknowns out there, what's going to happen with the Affordable Care Act, and so forth and so on. And so when you find out that doctors won't recommend to their children that they become physicians, there's a problem, and we've identified that. We started about a little over a year and a half. We did a study with the RAND Corporation looking at physician satisfaction and practice stability in six states, 30 practices, large ones, little ones, multi-specialty, single specialty. We learned some very important things. Not too surprising, but when you saw it in print and you understood what it meant, it was very sobering. Number one, the most important thing that makes physicians dissatisfied is when anything gets in the way of them being able to provide the highest quality health care that they can. And there are a lot of things that get in the way. Regulatory, administrative, you name it. The other one that bothers them and dissatisfies them is the whole issue around the electronic health record. We had heard and we'd all experienced troubles, but we did not understand the impact of how the electronic health record was impacting physician practices, how much time they had to spend away from the patient, systems that didn't work, they were not interoperative, they didn't talk to each other, it didn't solve the problem, and in fact may not have improved the care that they were delivering. However, we like technology, so we have to fix this one. So what this has done is empowered us now to go forward with the regulatory people, with the federal government, with the administration of this country, and with vendors to talk about we've got to fix this problem, because simply sticking a doctor in front of a computer and making them check all the boxes isn't going to improve the quality of healthcare.
In a way, have we as a society kind of inserted a wedge between the doctors and the patient community?
Very much so. When I have to sit there and the interface is the computer screen, not the space between me and my patient, that's a problem. And for many of us, what we do is we do the care, scribble a few notes, at the end of the day, go back in, and 2, 3, 4 hours later, have inputted all the data into the computer. That's not the way to practice medicine.
Another one of the key priorities the AMA has identified is changing the way medical education takes place. What is wrong with the system that has produced doctors in this country for decades?
Well, we've been teaching and training under the Flexnerian way, which was good 100 years ago, which is the way I was trained in medical school. But what we've realized that we're putting physicians out there now, some of whom may not be as competent as we would like, number one. Number two, they do not understand the various issues around the delivery of care. By that, I mean the business aspects of it. How do you do this? How do you accomplish that? And then, you know, we teach them hospital-based care, which is where we got most of our training, and most of us get our care as an outpatient now. So those are just a few examples. What we're looking at now, and there's been much discussion for years, but the AMA sort of put its money where its mouth is. We have to change it. Let's help fund some institutions to look at innovative changes in how we educate our young men and women who are going to be our physicians as we age, and looking at some very innovative and very collaborative pieces of work. There are 11 medical schools now involved. This is exciting work.
I suspect, though, no one goes to medical school because they're interested in billing and the economics of medicine. Is that ever going to change, and should we expect it to change?
You're right on that. You know, we take men and women into medical school. They have passion. They're driven to do something that makes a difference, because being a physician is probably one of the most wonderful jobs in the world. And at the end, we turn them out and we've trained them. They know the science. They know what to do, what not to do in that. But we need to make them able to move from the medical environment and their residency training programs into the real world space and continue that passion. So what we want them to be competent, we want to use their time wisely. Perhaps instead of calendar training, we do it competency training. They move through the system quicker. If they know they want to be a pediatrician, for example, they don't spend months and months in some educational piece of medical school that's probably not going to help them a whole lot at the end of their training. We want to make it better for them. They're more competent. They're happier in their shoes when they leave, and they're going to do a better job.
Much of the healthcare reform debate in this country right now is playing out through anecdotes. Who's been dropped from coverage? How much people are paying? This person is covered when they weren't before because of an underlying condition. How would you assess the state of healthcare reform in this country?
We started with an act, a piece of legislation in 2010, which we all knew was not perfect, but it was the best place to begin the process. When you look at what it addressed with the uninsured, the cost of care, the issue of fragmentation of care, many issues in those particular areas, we knew we had to make a difference. Something had to take place. It's not a perfect piece of legislation, but in fact, as we've begun to move this out, as for example with the exchanges, nobody in their right mind should have believed these would have run perfectly from the get-go. What we need to do is continue to sort of turn the knobs, make the improvements, make the adjustments, recognize where the challenges are, where the problems are, and agree to then solve them in a way to make it better for the patients utilizing the services and getting the care. I am always optimistic about this because I think what we had prior to 2010 in the Affordable Care Act was unacceptable, and in fact, we're moving in a better direction now.
We've been talking about healthcare reform, and there is this sort of ongoing gnashing of teeth and wringing of hands, and it's a debate. Do you see the medical community speaking with one voice in the healthcare reform debate, and does it need to?
It definitely needs to. We need to recognize, though, that there is diversity amongst us, and diversity is good because what it does, it challenges us to come to consensus, and that is the way everything needs to be done in our grand country. The Milwaukee County Medical Society is good evidence of that, what they've been able to do with improving access to health care, their immunization initiative, their patient safety efforts, coming together with one voice, doing things for their community that is very important. Good leadership starts at our community levels because that's where leadership is the toughest. And being able to get people together agreeing that this is the best pathway. You don't go from 0% to 100% buy-in, and you have to work at it. And that's where good leadership comes into play. But the Milwaukee County Medical Society has, in fact, done that in a very remarkable way.
Well, Dr. Artis Hovind, thank you so much. Best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Artis Hovind is the president of the American Medical Association, which has around 217,000 members around the country. She spoke with Lake Effect's Mitch Tyke while she was in Wisconsin to speak with members of the Medical Society of Milwaukee County. Dr. Hovind referenced funding levels for medical research in this country. Well, coming up next, several UWM scientists have received federal funding for their part in a far-ranging project. The surprising connection between physics and medicine on Lake Effect. That's coming up next on Milwaukee Public Radio.